I think a lot of people know this, but maybe a lot of people don't, that, you know, there's so much to learn from failure, and that, you know, the most successful people in the world have succeeded because of how many times they failed. And, succeeding tells you exactly what you did right, but failure tells you everything that you did wrong and everything that you can do differently next time.
I see you as like kind of this budding philosopher, Sam, and that's brilliant. Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. John Duffy, and I have the good fortune today to sit across from one of the most fascinating, unique human beings I've ever known, honestly. Sam is here.
Thank you.
Welcome, Sam.
Thank you. Yeah. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. All right, so there are so many facets of your story that I feel like I want you to tell, but if you don't mind, start from the beginning. Like, I mean, from birth. Like, tell me what your early life was like.
So I had an interesting birth, for sure. I was born with a disease called PKD, polycystic kidney disease, and when I was born, my parents were told bad news. You know, I came out and I was pretty much taken away immediately and from my parents, and they had told my parents that I had this disease and that, you know, most kids who have this disease don't make it or live very abnormal lives, and that they should expect, you know, not expect, you know, plan for the worst.
Right, plan for the worst. Yeah. That you might not make it, like, out of infancy or out of the building.
They were actually told not to feed me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
So, luckily, they didn't listen to that.
Right. So, good point. They didn't feed you.
But yeah, I mean, it was and there were a few smart doctors who came in. I think it was a day or two later, and said, you know, this is not as big of a deal as what you've been told, and he's probably going to be fine, and at some point in his life, probably within the next 5 years, he's going to need a kidney transplant, and he'll be on medication for the rest of his life. And that was a little more accurate. So I grew up with this disease, and it definitely affected certain aspects of my life, but it, I had to take medicine, and I actually didn't need a transplant until I was 22. They kept pushing it off further and further and further because I just was pretty much too healthy to have a transplant.
Wow.
And so that was about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's definitely been a part of my life, and I think it's taught me some lessons, and, you know, I don't think of it as a bad thing. I think of it as something that's given me a lot of knowledge and kind of a different perspective on things that most people have.
And can you give us, like, kind of just a thumbnail sketch of what PKD is? Like, so it's a kidney disease?
So, yeah, it's a kidney disease, and so I have a specific kind called AR-PKD. So both my parents had the recessive PKD gene, so yeah. I got it, and I got it at birth. Some people can get it, you know, when they're 40, you know, later in life, and with mine, there was a couple other things involved. I had, you know, high blood pressure, hypertension. There was some liver and spleen problems involved, and it was, I always had to watch things like protein and contact sports, because if I got hit, it would have been easy for me to be internally bleeding. And so I always kind of, I never got into sports. I was always, as you know, into cars. And
right.
You know,
was that by design? Was that? Do you think kind of an artifact of having this PKD?
I think about it. You know, it's tough to say, because I think that I was into cars before I could even play sports. So
it does seem like it's the cars thing. It seems in your blood somehow.
Yeah, but my parents say that my first words were wheels. So it says something right there.
Right.
And,
right.
But yeah, you know, I think that, you know, I've lived kind of with the threat of death almost, you know, for pretty much my whole life, and that's, it kind of puts things into perspective a little more than someone who doesn't have, you know, something to overcome or something that kind of, you know, tells them, be careful, you know, that, you know, what you have is fragile, and it can be taken away at any second, and Yeah.
What's it like to grow up with that awareness? You know, like that's got, so you've got a brother and a sister, mm-hmm. Who don't have this disease, right? And were probably allowed a little more birth than you were by your parents?
You know, they always worried about me more than the other two kids, for sure. And I think that has effect. I think that, you know, over worrying about something doesn't maybe have the greatest effect. You know, to give kids a little more free rein can sometimes be a little more helpful. And I got that later in my life now. And I feel much freer and I chase more opportunities and stuff of that nature. And I, you know, they were both really successful in school and I was kind of more a misfit. But it was, growing up with it was, you know, yeah, I couldn't play sports, watch what I was eating. So I never hung out with, like, the cool kids or the jocks or anything. You know, I was kind of in my own group of friends who were, you know, doing stuff that they shouldn't have been doing and getting into trouble. But it was definitely interesting. And I'm a very different person than my siblings because of what I've experienced and what I've had to go through.
You know, I think I've known you for, what, 7 or 8 years or so.
Something like that.
And to your great credit, this disease is not something, when I think about you, and I think, you know, like I made a list of things I wanted to talk to you about today, and that's way down on the list in a weird way. You know, it's not something that kind of is apparent in talking to you at all. You know what I mean? Until, you know, when the transplant was going on, obviously it was a focus. But would you say, like, oh, you have no idea? Like, when I was 6, 7, 8, 12, this affected my entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I never really let it, define me. I guess it was always something that was, you know, in the back of my mind that I would, you know, kind of watch out for. I was taking medicine every morning. I probably didn't understand it as much as I do now, of course, but...
Do you remember when you got that understanding, when you realized, like, oh, I have, something's different here than with other kids?
Well, you know, my stomach would kind of stick out because this disease causes your kidneys to be larger than they're supposed to be. So I would have a big stomach, and that, you know, I got made fun of for that and stuff. And you know, that plus my big ears didn't help. So growing up, you know, I was not as confident, especially with girls and stuff like that. And,
right.
Just going to social events sometimes, and I was shy, and I don't know. What was the question you asked?
It was really like, you know, what was it like growing up with this thing? You know, like, you know, did you recognize you were different? It sounds like you clearly did, and
well,
you had
the
physical manifestation.
I remember it was explained to me that, you know, I at some point in my life I was going to need a kidney transplant, and, you know, kind of figuring out what that actually meant. And I remember thinking about it before it happened, being like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to actually do that. You know, that's going to be crazy. So,
right.
You know, thinking about it literally right now, you know, I feel like maybe subconsciously I was afraid for a transplant, so I may have taken risks with my health that I wouldn't have taken otherwise, being, you know, drinking or other stuff, you know, some drugs. But again, I was always a little adventurous, wanted to try, you know, new things and experience new things and just kind of see what's out there and see what the world is about.
Right, right. You mentioned like that kind of like that you were aware of how fragile life is, right? You know, from an early age, and I totally get that. That makes so much sense. But to your point, I would think that a guy who recognizes that would be cautious, would be, you know what I mean? Like really not very adventurous, maybe really protective, maybe insular, you know,
right.
A homebody or something,
yeah.
You know? And you're, from what you said and from what I know about you, a pretty adventurous guy in a lot of ways, you know? Like, was that kind of a thought like, life is short, I better grab it while I can? Or was it kind of, you know, was there some other self-destructive element at play?
I think it was kind of like, life is short, you know, I try it while I can, because, you know, who knows if the kidney transplant's even going to work. you know, or, you know, right. that has its own risks to it, you know. So, you know, if I make it to 22 and, you know, I want to experience all I can kind of before then.
Wow.
And, I think that was kind of my mindset. And,
this is going to seem like a stupid question, but were you scared?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember being at, you know, festivals and stuff and being like, oh, fuck it, you know, you only live once.
right. And you thought this is my once and it might be 22 years.
I definitely had the thought, you know, like, you know, if I'm going out, I'm going out at a music festival in Vegas, you know, like.
Yeah.
Great time. So.
We'll get to that. One thing I haven't thought about is the effect that this had on your social life. You know, this idea that you were kind of this misfit and you had to almost pick your friends as a result of having this disease and, you know, kind of being limited in what you could do physically. Did it have a huge impact?
That's hard to say. I definitely made friends with, you know, kind of like a rougher crowd for a lot of years. And I don't know if that was because, you know, they were kind of living on the edge too, or if it was a blast hanging out with them, you know. You know, we had more fun than I think a lot of other kids in high school. And, you know, it's interesting because my high school group of friends is actually... It's a big group of us that are still really close, and I don't see that with other people.
Right. Well.
You know, I mean, literally right now I have two of my high school friends in my apartment with a friend from out of town from California that, you know, we went to school with. So we're all, like, still a big family, and I see other high school friends kind of separating away from each other because of life and work and, you know, all these things that kind of don't matter as much as, you know, being happy and being, you know, having good relationships and,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that, which I think is way more important than trying to make a quick buck at 20 to 25.
Yep.
So, did I choose my friends based on the disease? I don't know. It probably led to it, you know, and, you know, if I didn't have it, I probably would have had different friends. I probably would have been, you know, had a corporate job at, you know, some place and not been as happy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one thing I don't hear in your voice at all is regret, like about choices you made, about anything you've done with your life to date. Have you been really deliberate and, you know, particular about the moves you've made? Have they been thoughtful or have they been, you know, like reckless at times?
Definitely both. I mean, I was very reckless as a teenager. And I think now, sorry, can you say the question again?
Yeah. It's really like, were the choices that you made with your life, you've talked about like drinking drugs, you know, some things like that. Did you feel like they were thoughtful and like, this is kind of like what you were saying, like, I'm going to go out with a bang if I'm going out and I'm going to have a blast in the time I've got.
So those were a little more reckless, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
Obviously. And then, but a lot of the decisions I made were thinking further ahead, you know, 10, 20 even years down the line. Like, you know, I always knew that college wasn't a good fit for me and that, you know, I could probably get by without it. You know, there's plenty of other people who have done it, and a lot of those people have been very successful, and so there's something to that, I thought, you know. And in fourth grade, you know, I started having problems in school, so, you know, it didn't take much.
Yeah.
And I would never do homework. You know, for me to sit down and write a paper about something that I don't care about is not happening. You know, it's just my brain, my body wouldn't let me do it.
You know, Sam, this is part of what I wanted you to talk about is kind of the academic life. You are clearly such an intelligent, thoughtful guy. And when you're interested in something, man, you are unstoppable. And that's something I had to learn over time and talking to you, you know. And I remember when I met you, you were in high school, and I remember thinking, you know, dude, you're super smart, super intelligent. Just let's go. Let's just get grades. You know, like, just do what, you know, what I know you can do. And you were really clear then. Like, I feel like you had clarity then about, like, yeah, this school thing isn't going to work for me. I know that there's something out there for me that's different and better. And we, my generation, parents, you know, we have this idea of what the path is supposed to look like, right? And you deviated, man. You were not going according to plan. Tell me about your academic life and, you know, and how that worked for you and how it didn't and how you knew.
So, I can start all the way back. Yeah, for third grade, I think, it was the first year that we were actually assigned take-home homework. And I didn't do any of it for the entire year. And at the end...
In third grade.
And this is because I could get away with it, I found out. And the only reason I could get away with it, you know, every morning you would come to school with your homework in hand, and you would just go to the back of the room and put it in a basket. And, you know, if you didn't put it in the basket, apparently no one would yell at you. And, you know, no one would really follow up with you. And, you know, this weeks, you know, the month, the whole year went by, no one said anything. You know, I never put a paper in the basket. And
never once?
I don't think so. Maybe once or twice. Like, but, you know, you're supposed to have a stack of 50 pages at the end of the year when you get back to you, and everyone's laying them out on the ground, and my stack is, you know, it has one or two pages in it. And everyone's like, what happened? And, you know, I just kind of said, I don't know. You know?
Yeah, right. Somebody took my pages, man.
So that was kind of the first, example I have of kind of like, I just kind of got away with it. And there's been a lot of stuff like that in my life where I've just kind of like, I think I've gotten really lucky or something. Another example is in driver's ed school, you know, they had me write a paper because I missed, you know, a day more than I should have or something like that. And I never handed in the paper. They said, you know, we're looking for your paper. I said, I handed it in. They must have lost it. And then they actually called me back and said, sorry, we found it. And
there was no paper.
And there was no paper.
That's excellent.
So interesting, silly things like that have happened to me. And, but to go forward, you know, third grade, fourth grade, you know, I would do it, you know, reluctantly. I had a math tutor to help me with my math homework, my history homework. I'd copy off the guy, you know, 5 minutes before class. And there was one year where I actually did good in school, which was my junior year of high school, college. I'm sorry, no, yeah, high school.
High school.
Yeah, I didn't have a junior year of college. That was fueled by Adderall, 100%. You know,
is like, that right?
For sure. Yeah, but I got like A's and B's, so it was great. My parents were happy. I was cracked out on Adderall. I wasn't the happiest, so
right.
You know, it was. You know, it was another sign that, you know, this is not working. You know, if I need to take a drug that makes me feel not as good to be successful, that's not where I want to be.
Right, right. It takes us off the path a little bit.
Okay.
But give me 30 seconds on Adderall. I've been, you know, I work with so many, mostly guys, who take it. I don't know if I work with any guys who take it as prescribed. I think I work only with guys who take it when they feel like it, when they need it, when they're for finals. A lot of guys have no prescription for it, as you know, and just, you know, mm-hmm. buy it. And it feels, it's becoming a drug I loathe in a lot of ways, just because I think it like really messes with people. And like you just described, like not many guys come in and say, I feel really great on it. They will say it does what it, as advertised. I can focus like a laser, but I don't feel like myself. So what's your experience been?
So it's kind of just that, you know. I mean, I started detailing business when I was in high school, when I was 17, junior year.
All right.
Fueled by Adderall, I'm sure. You know,
uh-huh.
I wouldn't have had the energy or anything to do it otherwise, and. But you know, at that point I was taking Adderall every day and then smoking weed every night to counteract me, you know, the Adderall keeping me awake for the rest of the night.
Right. So you take the stimulant and then you got to calm down at some point. Right.
So that was,
right.
You know, days in a row for a week and then, you know, a day or something break or 2 days break or, I didn't like it, but you know, I was concentrating and I was getting stuff done. So. I took it for that year, and then after that year, I told my parents, you know, I didn't like the way it made me feel, and I, you know that I've been doing great, but, you know, and they agreed, you know, if they, you know, they understood that if it wasn't making me feel good, then there was no reason to do it, and that I shouldn't be doing it, probably.
You know, kudos to your parents for having that wherewithal, right? Because, yeah. Like, here's the one, like, outlier year where it looks like, oh, yeah, Sam's, like, killing it academically, right? You know, like, we've turned a corner somehow, right? And they could have, like, they could have drank that Kool-Aid deep, right? And decided, like, oh, yeah, okay, no, you got to keep taking the Adderall, and then it's going to carry you through college, even though you don't like it. You don't feel like yourself on it. And kudos to you for having this instinct, like, yeah, I could do this. But I'm not willing to live my life this way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's no way to, you know, live. You know, just, I mean, you're drugged up all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
24/7, pretty much.
Yep.
Even when you're not on it, you're still like on it. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
system.
Yep. And you're one of the few guys I know who has that perspective on it. Who's like, you know, stepped away from it far enough where you realize, I don't want to live that way. I work with too many people who kind of step in and out of it. You know what I mean? Like, and kind of it feels like even when, like you're suggesting, even when they're not taking it, it owns them somehow, you know?
Right.
Was it easy for you, like, after junior year, just to, like, step away? Like, did you know for certain, like, I'm done?
Yeah, definitely. And that is the senior year I graduated early because I, you know, kind of stopped showing up.
Right.
You know, you know, high school was not easy for me, and you know, I wasn't studying for tests or anything, so I had just enough credits to graduate early in May instead of graduate early in July or January, I think.
Yeah, I think
January.
You finished in January instead of May. Yeah.
January instead of May. That's
right.
What it was, and then I don't know exactly what. Well, and then you know, it was a big argument having my parents decide what I was going to do. And they just wanted me to get some experience. I ended up going to spend a year in Oxford and in England. And you know, they were like, you know, go there, get some schooling. You know, it'll be good, and you'll come back. You'll do college, and you know, just to kind of ease you into college and not do that right away.
Right.
So I went to England, and you know, took these joke classes that were, you know, one-on-one or one-on-two, you know, the most biggest class I had was me and my two best friends, you know, so it was a total joke. And you know, would show up stoned to class and, you know, be drunk by the time we left. And, you know, I mean, it was a party.
And you mean this literally, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you would go to the pub with your teacher, and you know, he'd be like, "Oh yeah, meet me at the pub, and we'll just talk there." You know, it's only the two of you. You know, so
right.
He didn't care. And I mean, the classes were easy. That another example of me getting away with something is I had a math class. I showed up, I think, probably four or five times, and out of those four or five times, the teacher didn't show up three times. And so, I mean, I literally had two classes with the guy the entire time, and I was freaking out. I was like, oh, my God, this is the class where I'm going to get, you know, an F. The other classes were film and photography and, you know.
Easy, like really, drop in the bucket, yeah.
Yeah, and so I finally get my grade, and the teacher gave me a C+, because apparently he hadn't been there half the time. I wasn't there half the time, so he just figured, you know.
Split the difference.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and, you know, it's going to look bad on him if he gets if he gives me an F. So if it's
right.
best for both of us if I just get a C.
Wow. You know, when I think about like the story you're telling from third grade through Oxford, that scheming way, you know, kind of like figuring your way around the rules. Sometimes it sounds to me like more difficult than actually just doing the stuff, you know what I mean? And maybe more stressful in a way. Were you stressed out? Were you worried about it?
Well,
or
yeah,
did it feel...
I worried about it a lot.
Did
you? I wasn't sure if I was going to... I was sure I wasn't going to pass the class.
Right.
You know, I was just like, you know, shoot, you know, my parents are going to be pissed. You know,
yeah.
I have to come back and, you know, give them an F or retake this class, like, online because I can't, stay in Oxford another semester. And so that was interesting to find out that I had a C+.
Yeah.
And... And then I came back and went to University of Arizona for 2 years, which was the one and only school I applied to. And I
sarcasm noted.
I got in, luckily, and I went there for 2 years. And my dad wanted to hire someone that could kind of have my back and, you know, help me get tutors if I needed them, help me just kind of whatever I needed academically. He was there to help.
Yep.
And this guy ended up being a guy who basically took my classes for me and told me that there was a lot more that he could do than what he told my parents that he could do.
Unbelievable.
And
so you went to University of Arizona, but you didn't really go to the University of Arizona,
right,
huh?
Yeah, I think in 2 years I showed up on the campus, you know, not as many fingers as I have, and half of those were for pool parties and stuff, you know, so...
No kidding.
It was a total joke, and I was getting straight A's because of this guy, and, you know, I would go to his house, you know, meet with a teacher, we would talk, be like, all right, I'm going to take 3 year classes, it's going to be, you know, this much.
Right.
And, you know, you'll get guaranteed A's for all these classes, and, you know, we'd all smoke a bowl afterwards, and then it'd be great.
No kidding.
So it was like a scene out of, like, a movie.
You've got me at a weird time. In the last week, I've watched The Big Short and Spotlight. So now I feel like, you know, the scrim has been lifted, and I see what really is going on, like, behind the scenes.
Right.
Is this what you're describing, what you went through down in Arizona with this guy? Do you think that happens? Like, or do you think, like, you had this one unique thing in America? Or do you feel like, no? I think there's a lot of people in college who aren't in college.
Yeah, I would. I think, I mean, a lot of athletes I know were using him.
Uh-huh.
I know, you know, a lot of privileged kids, you know, that just didn't have any focus. You know, they just wanted, I mean, maybe me being one of them, you know, that wanted to smoke weed all day and, you know,
right,
hang out at the apartment, have a pool party every now and then and just kind of live like that, which was great, you know.
Yeah,
It lasted for a while. It was fun. But, you know, I after, you know, being there for 2 years, I kind of realized, all right, I'm not really getting anything out of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I'm just kind of wasting time and money. And, so I actually told my parents what was going on.
You did? What was that like?
They weren't thrilled about it. They thought this guy that they hired was a crook, and, you know, he had, you know, taken something away from me and, you know, taken away, like, an education and experience that I could have had. And,
right.
I don't think I saw it the same way, but I ended up coming back, and I somehow convinced them to send me to Austria for 3 months for another school thing. They wanted me to go to DePaul, and I said, I'm not ready to go back to school yet. I haven't gone to school since, you know, junior year of high school.
Right,
technically.
Right.
And, you know, I said, let me do another thing abroad. It's amazing that I convinced them. And actually, I've talked to them about this, and they said that they did it mainly because they knew that the transplant was probably coming soon. And they wanted, you know, I guess another experience or whatever. I went to Innsbruck, Austria for 3 months with one of my best friends who I met in Oxford. And, you know, that was, and then, you know, that was another, again, you know, not serious classes. I took Germanic literature and, actually these were kind of harder classes, none of which I passed, of course, but, I came home and I was having, you know, they wanted me to go back to DePaul. I enrolled for a week. I didn't show up to any classes, I don't think, maybe one. And then I was taken to the hospital with this thing called encephalopathy, and they said it's time for a transplant. And that's what happened then.
Got it. We'll get to that. It sounds brutal at times, you know, the academic thing, you know, where it feels like square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
And your strength seems to be almost obviously elsewhere, you know what I mean? Because your ability to kind of circumvent the norm, the rules, and, you know, and to make other things happen, make A's happen sometimes, or get through the University of Arizona. I mean, it doesn't feel accidental. It feels like something specifically about you that's like kind of like, got this, you've got this kind of can-do vibe about you where it's like, okay, if I want to make something happen, I know I can make it happen, even if I don't want to engage in this class.
Right.
Yeah.
And, if my parents needed an A and I couldn't do it, there was another way for it to get done.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And, you know, there's always, you know, at least three ways to do something, you know?
Yeah.
You know, your way, some other guy's way, and then the third way that no one's thought of.
Yeah, yeah.
And so.
Well, listen, if you're willing to stick around, maybe we can talk about your story from that point forward, like from, you know,
okay.
Like and if you're up for that, and we'll come back tomorrow and talk that through, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Fascinating guy, Sam. We'll talk again.
Thank you.